Hi, I'm Ram. Today I'll be talking about our work on correlated crash vulnerabilities. This is joint work with other students, Aishwarya, Yuvraj, and Tanu, and our advisors, Andrea and Ramsey, are punching to serve. Distributed storage systems are central to building modern web services. For example, several large-scale internet services depend on distributed storage systems, such as MongoDB and Redis, to store all their application data and metadata. Reliability of user data is an important concern for any storage system, and the fundamental technique used by distributed storage systems to ensure high level of reliability is that of replication. So a single piece of data is not just stored on a single machine, but it's replicated across a bunch of servers. So even if a single machine crashes, the distributed system as a whole can still be able to serve your data, and it is well understood that distributed storage systems can endure such single machine crashes. However, our focus in this work is a different crash situation, which we call correlated crashes, in which all data replicas crash and recover together. Obviously, while such a failure is happening, the data and the system as a whole is going to be unavailable because all the machines are down. But in reality, when the cause of the failure is fixed, all these machines are going to recover. And when they do so, users expect that the data stored by the system will be intact. So how often do these correlated crashes happen in the real world? They happen more often than we think, due to several reasons, such as natural catastrophes or sometimes even due to human errors. For example, in 2015, there was a lightning strike that caused a power outage in Google data centers, which ultimately led to a data loss event. Or there could be administrators taking down empty data centers just by pressing wrong keys. Or there are funny cases where truck drivers can plunge into power cables, causing all the machines in the data center to reboot. This really happened. And also in a study of outages in Google data centers, a paper showed that multiple nodes can crash and reboot in a correlated fashion due to kernel bugs or kernel upgrades, or sometimes due to power outages within the data center. There are several other cases that have been reported in the recent past showing the prevalence of these correlated crashes. Now, to closely understand what happens to user data when such correlated crashes happen, let's consider this piece of data which is replicated across three machines here. So there are also other machines in the data center. Now, let's say the user wants to update this older version of data to a newer version. So he sends a request to one of the nodes in the cluster. Now, unfortunately, a catastrophic failure hits the data center while this update is happening, and so all the machines crash and reboot. Or there could be a correlated reboot which takes down all the data replicas at the same time. In all such crash scenarios, the nodes are left only with their on-disk persistent state, or their in-memory buffers and network buffers are wiped away. But users expect that after such a recovery is performed, that either they need to see the new data if they got an acknowledgement for the request that they sent, or they're expecting to see the old data. They're never expecting to see their data to be corrupted, and they are always going to assume that the system as a whole will be available after recovery. So this seems very simple, right? You have stored a bunch of data, you're trying to retrieve it back at a later point in time. But in reality, local file systems on which distributed storage systems store their data complicate this recovery. Recent research has shown that local file systems influence persistent states that can occur after a crash. So to make this concrete, let's take an example. Let's say there is a file foo with a single block of data in it already. Now I wish to update the contents of this block. So I issue a period system call to do this. Unfortunately, a system crash happens while this period system call is executing. And on reboot, what should I expect in this overwritten region of the file? Well, one question to ask is, can we expect the data to be atomically updated? While this could be assumed in ext3 and ext4 in data journaling mode, or in other file systems such as ButterFS, the same cannot be assumed true in ext3 and ext4 in their default ordered journaling mode, or in other file systems such as XFS. So this kind of local file system crash behaviors directly impacts distributed storage systems because distributed storage systems depend on local file systems to safely store their data. So the focus of this study is answering the simple question of, do distributed storage systems violate user-level expectations in the presence of correlated crashes? The inner question that we're trying to answer is, how do distributed crash recovery protocols help recover from file system crash behaviors that I showed in the previous slide? So the second question that we're trying to answer is how to check for the presence of correlated crash vulnerabilities. To this end, we introduced PACE, which is this protocol-aware crash explorer. Since the number of states that can occur during a correlated crash is really large, PACE uses knowledge about the distributed protocol to prune the state space effectively and find correlated crash vulnerabilities. Here's the high-level summary of our results. We applied PACE to 8 systems, including popular ones such as MongoDB, Redis, and Zookeeper. PACE found 26 unique vulnerabilities across all these well-tested systems, leading to many severe consequences. These vulnerabilities can also be exposed on real file systems such as ext4 and ButterFS. We reported many of the vulnerabilities we found. While many have been fixed, some are fundamentally hard to fix, and they require a lot of thought about how we're going to solve these problems in the future. Here are the two overarching lessons that we take away from the study. The first is local file system crash behaviors impact distributed storage systems. So in order to build reliable distributed storage systems, we need to understand the layers that we build upon them, especially the local file systems. The second lesson is that problems in local storage protocols are not fixed by distributed recovery protocols in many cases. So this gives the users and the applications that depend on distributed storage systems to have a false sense of reliability since the data is always replicated and so on. So I introduced and motivated the problem. I'll talk now about how we capture this stage that can occur due to a correlated crash. Then I'll describe the tool and discuss the vulnerabilities we found, and finally summarize and conclude. So how to capture persistent states that can occur during a correlated crash? Here's our approach. So let's consider a simple distributed update protocol between two nodes, nodes P and Q. They start with persistent states P5 and Q5. P sends a message to Q. Now notice that the network operations do not modify the persistent state. Now P writes to its local file, and so transitions to new persistent state P1. It performs another write, it transitions to P2. It sends another message to Q. Q, on receiving this message, writes to its local file and so transitions to Q1. So in this execution, we now compute the globally reachable persistent states. For example, a correlated crash might have happened well before the execution of the protocol, and so Q5 is a reachable correlated crash state in this execution. And similarly, P2 Q1 is also a reachable correlated crash state in this execution because a correlated crash might have happened well after the execution of the protocol. Similarly, there are other crash states that could have happened. All these correlated crash states that can be reached in this execution are logically equivalent to consistent cuts in this distributed execution. And we call them as reachable persistent prefixes because each state captures the prefix of the file system operations on each of the nodes. Notice that some of the states here are not reachable, such as P5 Q1 and P1 Q1. So now we consider how local file systems used in these two nodes, P and Q, influence the correlated crash states that might have happened. So let's consider this cut here, P2 Q5. File system at P could reorder the operations. So consider these two writes, 1 and 2, shown here. Here a crash happens just after the second write is issued, but it is possible for the local file system at P to reorder the first write, and so on reboot, P will find itself in a state where it does not see the new contents for the first block, but the second write to be persisted. We also consider that file systems may not atomically update all operations. For example, here a correlated crash happens while P is transitioning from P1 to P2, and a crash happens while this write is being performed. And if you consider each of these characters to be a data block, a crash could have happened just after writing the first block, or just after writing the first and the second block, and so on. And on reboot, P could find itself in any of these states. So the reordering and the partially persisting of crashes that I showed you in the previous slides, we call them as relaxations, because these are the relaxations that are allowed by the particular file system deployed on those nodes on top of the reachable persistent prefixes that we saw earlier. So these relaxations vary across file systems. For example, consider this reordering relaxation that I showed you. While this could happen on ext3 and ext4 in write-back and ordered mode, the same is not possible on ext3 and ext4 in data journaling mode or in ButterFS file system. So to model the variations of these file systems, we borrow the idea of abstract persistence model from our previous work, which defines what exact relaxations are possible on a particular file system, thereby defining what exact crash states are possible on a particular file system. So I told you about how we capture correlated crash states. Now I'll describe the tool. So as I showed you, relaxations on one node can cause multiple states for that node to happen. But Pace needs to consider different relaxations and different combinations of nodes on all reachable prefixes. For example, let's say there are three nodes in a distributed system. A correlated crash could have happened while these nodes are performing three different operations, and there are different ways in which you can relax the file system constraints. So for example, you can relax the constraints on one node at a time, or two nodes at a time, and so on. So this results to a huge state space explosion. But Pace effectively prunes the state space using protocol knowledge. At a high level, Pace differentiates distributed storage systems that use replicated state machines approaches at their core and those that do not. There are several details around these rules in the paper, but here is the result that shows the effectiveness of pruning. So Logcabin is a replicated state machine that uses Raft as its core consensus protocol. We explored its state space using the brute force approach and the Pace approach. While the brute force explored 1 million states to find 2 vulnerabilities running over a week, Pace explored just 28K states, well under 8 hours, and found the same vulnerabilities. And similarly, in Redis, Pace explored 11x fewer states than the brute force approach, but still found the same 3 vulnerabilities as found by the brute force approach. So here's the high-level methodology of how Pace works. Pace runs a workload on top of an initial cluster state, such as inserting a key-value pair into a replicated data store. It traces all the operations while this workload is being executed, and so it can obtain all the file system and network operations happening on each of the nodes in the system. On top of which, it imposes the file system relaxation model that I told you, and also it computes all the consistent cuts, and applies the file system relaxation model on top of the consistent cuts to produce all possible crash states. So each state here corresponds to a different correlated crash state that might have occurred while the workload is getting executed. So on top of each such state, Pace invokes a checker script, which just starts the distributed cluster from the correlated crash state, runs any recovery tools if there are any, and performs a read for the key value pair that you inserted as part of the workload. Finally, Pace reports the vulnerabilities such as corruption or data loss or unavailability, and also points to the exact source line code that is causing this vulnerability, easing the process of fixing these vulnerabilities. So now I'll discuss about the vulnerabilities that we found. So we applied Pace to 8 popular systems. We put all these systems in the safest configurations possible. So the vulnerabilities that we are finding are like that we find in the real tight configuration. So for example, we enable synchronous replication, we enable synchronous disk writes, we enable checksums if there are any, and so on. So to give a flavor of the vulnerabilities that we found, I'm going to walk you through an example. Redis is a system where there is a master and a couple of followers acting as a backup for the master. The followers sync the latest data from the master on startup. They write it to their local disk. Now let's say there's an update request coming to the master. The master receives this update. It appends to its local append-only file and fsyncs it because we have enabled synchronous disk writes, and synchronously replicates the data to the followers. The followers receive this update. They append it to their local files. They also fsync and then send the acknowledgement back to the master. The master receives all these acknowledgements and finally sends the acknowledgement back to the client. Now, a correlated crash could have happened while the master was performing this append operation. Notice that follower 1 could have crashed at any of these possible points, and follower 2 similarly could have crashed at any of these possible points. Now, let's take a closer look at this append operation happening on the master. So the master is actually trying to append 3 blocks of data to the file. A crash happened just after the append was issued, but the local file system could reorder the second block after the crash, so which means on reboot, the master is going to find itself in a state where the first and the third blocks are persisted, but not the second block. And the master on reboot does not realize that this is sort of a partial update and serves this corrupted data access to the users, thereby showing a silent corruption to users. Moreover, notice that the followers still have the old proper version of the data, but the master on rebooting, it thinks that the followers are lagging behind, and so it propagates this partial update to the followers, thereby overriding the proper older version. So Pace realizes that for this vulnerability to go away, this append on the master has to be atomically persisted. So it annotates that append operation with the square bracket that I have shown here. There are also other atomicity dependencies here. There's also one ordering dependency. So for example, if this rename is not persisted before the final FTT is synced, there is a data loss window. So hopefully what I have shown you here is that local file system crash behaviors impact distributed storage systems. In this case, the user data was corrupted. The second thing that I've showed is problems in local storage protocols are not fixed by distributed recovery protocols. In this particular case, it was actually worsened by the distributed recovery protocol because the master takes this corrupted data and propagates to the unaffected followers. So here are the consequences of the vulnerabilities that we find if we assume that the underlying file system is ext2, which kind of provides weak crash guarantees. Your data could be silently corrupted, or it could be lost, or your cluster could become unavailable, or all these consequences can be seen in a window of time. So as I showed you, Redis can silently corrupt your data. Six systems can permanently lose your data, and six other systems can become unavailable in the presence of correlated crashes. We also configured Paste to use other file systems as a local file system in each of the nodes. As I showed you, in ext2, we found 26 vulnerabilities. On structured file systems such as ext3 data journaling mode, where most of the operations are atomically committed except for multi-system call updates or multi-block writes, and where all the operations are committed in order, only two of the vulnerabilities that we find actually manifest. On another popular file system, which is Butterfizz, which could reorder directory operations very frequently, we find that 10 of the vulnerabilities could actually manifest. We find that ordered file systems lead to less vulnerabilities, but there is also a performance implication to that. So in summary, I showed you that distributed storage systems violate user-level expectations in the presence of correlated crashes. Even popular and well-tested systems such as ZooKeeper and Redis are vulnerable to such correlated crashes. Local file system crash behaviors directly impact distributed storage systems, and that in many cases, distributed recovery protocols do not help recover from local storage protocols, problems in local storage protocols. So to conclude, distributed storage systems are now the primary choice for storing large amounts of data, and the reliability of these systems is very crucial. And when developing these complex systems, it's easy to look for simplistic failure models, but in reality, these complex systems can fail in complex ways, and there could be subtle interactions between layers that these distributed systems are built on top of, and it's very essential to understand these interactions and carefully make the systems reliable. So our software and results will be soon available at this URL. Thank you, and I'll be happy to take questions now.
Hi, John Osterhout from Stanford. You talked mostly about the problems in your talk and not about the solutions, but I'm curious, is this just a matter that applications need to keep their own checksums at block level to make sure that the blocks they hand off to the operating system are written correctly? And if they do that, if applications do that consistently, do all the problems go away, or are there still other issues to deal with?
Interesting question. Most of the problems could be solved by application-level techniques such as having block checksums and so on, but there are some problems that could not be solved just by carefully checking for such conditions. For example, the problems that arise due to expectations such as multiple system calls will be atomically persisted, those things are tricky to solve because the recovery code has to be carefully written so that it expects all such possible states. And we found that developers are not willing to fix such recovery code, which makes it very complex for them to understand.
Hi, Jeffrey Willukman from University of Chicago. So you mentioned that you experienced some state space explosion when you try to run the checker through all of the possibilities. But I don't hear any pruning policies that you have mentioned, actually. So can you probably give an example of it?
Sorry, I didn't get the second part.
So can you probably give an example of pruning policy that you have implemented to reduce the state space explosion?
Oh, I see. OK. So for example, let's say the in Redis, right? We don't exercise cases where we simultaneously relax constraints on two nodes at a time, because the slaves are kind of symmetrical, so you don't need to do them. It's enough to just do one. And moreover, the system as a whole is going to follow the updates that are present in the master. So if you want to check for the data loss or data corruption vulnerabilities, it's essential just to relax constraints just on the master.
Thank you.